Can you just meet her, please? Because I've just got a
I've got a meeting at 7:30. Sorry.
It's 7:15 a.m. in suburban Melbourne, and this is the scene at my house most mornings.
You want to sit down at your table? Babe, I've got to tell you, I do not have time for this morning.
I'm Madeline Morris. I live in Australia, but no matter which country you're from, if you've got kids and both parents work, this noisy, stressful morning tableau will likely sound familiar. It certainly does for my friend Libby.
I actually put a post on Facebook a few weeks ago. I'd been up since 5:30. I'd made cupcakes with my three-year-old. I'd done two loads of washing. I'd dropped the kids off. I'd done a whole lot of stuff. I'd had two outfit changes. And then you get to work and you run a meeting and you sit in a meeting and look around and go, do people actually realise what I've been through to get here? Like, does anyone actually want to say, well done, you made it?
For working mothers around the world, this struggle to get out the door, drop the kids at nursery and hurry on to work is a rushed, guilt-inducing but necessary part of every day.
Okay, babe, let's go.
But is this the only way?
We're late.
In this two-part documentary for the BBC World Service, my two-year-old daughter Scarlett and I are on a quest to find out how other cultures care for their children when mums go back to work. We'll pack our bags for Fiji, where a child really is raised by a whole village. And we'll head to China to visit a boarding school for three-year-olds. But first, let me show you how it works in my family, as Scarlett and I set out on our journey to find who's left holding the baby.
Morning, Renee.
Good morning. Oh,
can you say good morning?
Thank you. Phone's ringing.
It's about 8 a.m. and Scarlett and I have just arrived at Treehouse, her nursery. This is normally when I drop her off on my way to work. There's a steady stream of mum and dads dropping their kids off too. There's about 100 children at Treehouse on any given day, and they range in age from about 6 weeks to 5 years.
My name's Veronica Ferguson. I'm the director of Treehouse Early Learning here in Elsternwick. We run what's called an emerging curriculum. So the basic description of an emerging curriculum is a play-based program. There is a lot of focus on programs and providing high-quality education for children. We've obviously done a lot of research in the fact that 0 to 5 is a really important time for children. So although it is a homely and caring environment, we also definitely focus on the program and making sure that we are developing the children as much as we can.
Here in Australia, daycare or nursery is a popular choice. Around half of all mothers of two-year-olds work, and of those kids, around half are in some form of formal childcare, and both those figures are growing every year. For families like mine, where grandparents live far away and nannies are unaffordable, daycare is the only option. But many Australian parents also think sending kids to paid childcare is good for them.
I'm Amanda Nolan. I have three children here at Treehouse. I have Hannah, who's just turned one, Alex, who's nearly three, and Jessie is 4 and a half. I'm a firm believer in the first 5 years of a child's life really mould their beliefs and their personalities, and I think it's important for them to get exposure to people well beyond their own parents and their own environment, and to start to socialise, and no harm in picking up a few extra little coughs and colds and things.
And how young were your kids when you put them in?
My first child was 10 months, my second child was 6 months, and my third child was about 7 months. Mm-hmm. Admittedly, the very first day I dropped my first child at childcare, I was slightly nervous, and I think that was the only day I've ever had any doubts.
What about the expense of it? Because it's not, childcare isn't cheap.
No, childcare is not cheap. Oh, it ends up being a good 7.5, 10, probably $30,000 on childcare.
Probably about $30,000 Australian on childcare every year?
Yes, at least.
So you need to be earning at least $50,000, really, in order to pay for that, which is what some women would be the full-time wage for some women.
Yes, absolutely. My wage pretty much goes to childcare and nanny and a little bit towards rent.
Unlike Amanda, I can't say that I never have any doubts when I drop Scarlett off.
I've got to go, babe.
Even after a year of her being at nursery, some days the guilt and sadness still break my heart.
I'll see you this afternoon.
So I think it's very common for mothers to feel guilty about their childcare decisions, regardless of what kind of decision it is, whether it's with a nanny or with a family daycare home or with a childcare centre.
That's Professor Linda Harrison, one of Australia's leading experts on early childhood education. Like many parents, I've read well-known studies which suggest children who spend long hours in daycare can be more aggressive and take more risks. So I've got a few questions for the professor.
Is there a hierarchy of care? So parental care is best, nanny care is second best, group care is next?
Research hasn't really looked at that. What we certainly know is that the influence of the family, so parental influences on children, is the strongest influence on children's lives.
I think part of the reason that I worry about leaving Scarlett at daycare and other mums do is that it has a lot of bad press. And there have been studies which have shown that there are actually some negative outcomes for kids left in daycare.
In many cases, what we're now starting to see as more research is coming through from other countries is that you have to take account of the quality of care, which seems in some cases to counteract the negative impact of longer hours.
My impression from what I see at my daughter's daycare is that it's very professionalised and sort of quite education based.
Mm-hmm. There's a real focus on children's learning, but it's done in a way that's not sort of teaching a program of teaching children specific academic skills. It's done through a play-based learning. What we're seeing in some of these studies that are looking at cognitive outcomes are talking about a cognitive boost of centre-based care. If you think about the facilities that most centres can provide, you know, it's far, far greater than even the best home can provide, you know, the outdoor equipment, the huge range of puzzles, the changing array of toys and things like that, you know. So it makes sense that a cognitive boost is coming from the good quality centre-based programs.
Professor Harrison makes me feel conflicted. On one hand, I'm pleased I might be doing something good for Scarlett's brain by sending her to daycare. On the other, I feel guilty for not looking after her myself, and I worry that we're starting to think about education and preparing children for school when they're still really just babies. And that's a concern shared by Professor David Lancey, a world-renowned anthropologist who studies parenting across culture and generations.
What I see is a fashion, a movement to really, really ratchet up the expectations in terms of shaping that child, optimizing that child's development. I think we've moved well beyond just what do we need to do in order to raise children adequately to meet the demands of 21st century society. It's bound to be stressful. There's very little downtime. There's very little relaxing for folks nowadays.
It's exhausting. And that's one of the exhausting reasons that I wonder if it's really worth it. But then I don't see how we would do it any other way here.
When I look back at my own childhood, both my parents worked. My sister and I, we went to school. We did well in school. We had really idyllic childhoods. And yet, I don't remember this kind of running around craziness and stress.
That was then, but what about now? Well, Professor Lancey assures me that there are still places in the world where parents work and children are looked after, but without the rush, pressure and guilt that so many Western parents feel. It's time for Scarlett and I to pack our bags in search of a different way. It's time for us to go to...
Where are we going?
Fiji!
Fiji!
There will never be a shortage of good women who will come and help you look after your children.
They say it's easy to bend a tree when it's just small, and it's hard to bend a tree if it's big. You get me?
Well, here we are. We've just stepped off the plane and into sunny, sticky Fiji in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And we're here because I've heard that this small island nation still practices the centuries-old tradition of communal childcare and child rearing. And it's a completely foreign concept to me and probably to lots of other women in the West. So I'm really interested to see how it works. And I'll be really interested to see how Scarlett gets on with the Fijian kids as well. Come on, babe. Good morning. Hi, Selena. This is my Scarlett.
Selina Kurulefa is our guide for our first foray into Fijian village life. She's a psychologist, and like most Fijians, she's mad about kids.
Hello!
They told me two of the store employees.
She is nearly two.
You ready?
Ready to go.
Around half of Fiji's population of nearly a million live in villages where traditional culture is still strong. Selina's taking us to one not far from the capital, Suva.
The name of the village is Waturua. It's not a really large village, it's quite small, huh? Maybe about 100 homes altogether.
Okay.
And the main source of income would be market of fish selling and vegetable selling.
So that would this be a typical Fijian village?
Yeah. By many measures, it is a typical Fijian village. They still do the planting together, fishing together. They still have, like today, Mondays is their communal cleaning up day. And when the men are cleaning up, the women are cooking for the men.
You're listening to Who's Left Holding the Baby on the BBC World Service. After we arrive in Waturua, I'm introduced to Lemba, a young mother. Like most of the women in the village, she doesn't have paid work. Her job is to go fishing for crabs and prawns in the bush. But today it's high tide at the river, so she's free to take me on a tour of the village.
This is a church. We got two churches. One is a Methodist and one is a Catholic from that side.
Okay.
Inaka.
Inaka wakalevu.
We're walking through the beautifully concreted paths past all of the wooden houses that are built up on stilts because it's very common to have flooding here. All the houses are very close together. You can really look from one window into your neighbour's window with no problems.
Yep.
Everyone knows each other's business in the village?
Yes.
Bula.
Bula.
This is the house I was talking about. This is my partner when we go to the bush. So we leave the kids at home. The grandmother's looking after the kids. And the sister too is got a small baby, so she can look after the kids at home too. So you just put all of the kids in together?
Yeah, here we stay in the village like this. The children can go house to house, going looking for fun like this. They stay in that side and they come this side so they can playing.
As we talk, the freedom for kids to roam around is obvious. About 10 of them scamper in and out of the little wooden shack, giving Scarlett her own introduction to village life. And she happily follows them outside, barefoot, to play while we chat.
I'm Scarlett, sit down here. Oh, you want to play with the kids?
Yeah?
It's really interesting to see Scarlett play with the kids here, because back home, she's much more shy. So I don't know what's going on, but she's definitely much more much more friendly.
Joining us in the hut is Peter, Lemba's cousin, who's just put down the grass cutter he was brandishing as part of the communal cleaning up day.
So do you do everything very communally here in the village?
Yes, we help each other around. Yeah? Well, say, for instance, if we don't have any salt, just come here, ask for some salt.
Really, because that's so different from how I live my life. My life, I live in my house, and I know my neighbours. I say hello to my neighbours, but I would never ask for salt from my neighbours.
You sure? Yeah.
I go to the shop and buy some salt.
Even in here, we don't have any freezer, so if I need to get where to put my chicken for Sunday, I just go to one of the houses and ask them to put the chicken there. Sometimes I can sleep here for a night.
Do you have any nieces and nephews?
Yes. They are all my nieces. They are all my nephews.
Do you help look after your nieces and nephews? Do you discipline them if I need it?
Yes. During my time, we get hiding. But now, it's because there's a lot of children, right? So we just talk to them. Yeah. We all take responsibility for all the kids in the village.
What do you think the effect of that is?
So they could all turn up to be good citizens of Fiji and keep up with the tradition. Eh? No. And it's good because you're living in a community where you look after everybody, you take care for anybody else.
It's clear that the communal way of life and caring for children is still very much alive in Fiji. But I was interested in what Peter had said about discipline. In Fiji, discipline is also part of the extended family's childcare role, and that's traditionally meant giving a smack or even a strap to children. But as Peter said, there's now a big push against violence. And while we might naturally assume that to be only a good thing, it's changing family relations. The issue's clearly weighing heavily on Fijians' minds. So many people brought it up with me in conversation. So I wanted to talk about it more with Selena Kurulefa, the psychologist.
There are some villages now in Fiji declared violence-free villages, which means that there is no form of punishment allowed in any shape or form.
So it's interesting that what we're seeing now in Fiji, and these, even in these very traditional settings, is more of the state stepping in and saying this is acceptable, this is not acceptable, and that's quite recent.
That is quite recent. Fiji became a signatory to many of these conventions beginning in 2006, 2008. But the implementation, the following through, the training of police officers to identify, you know, when there is abuse, the training of medical officers, this is all a work in progress. But I can definitely say that when parents think that the extended family have stepped in and overstepped their mark, a lot of parents now, they go and get the formal help.
So that's really a very big change, isn't it? So we're seeing these external values coming in, and that's fundamentally changing how children are actually brought up from a young age.
Absolutely, and I do know that a lot of parents are struggling from the families that I've met, from the field work that we've done. The state intervenes in a lot of things. There are laws now in place where then if the neighbor sees that you are smacking your kid, you can report it. So parents, everyone is now a bit, needs to become a bit more attuned to what the laws are saying. Eh?
As we've been hearing, Fiji is changing and not everyone lives in these traditional subsistence villages anymore. A large part of Fiji's economy now relies on tourism, and around all of the big hotels you'll find what once were small villages now bursting at the seams with people who work in those big hotels, waiters, cleaners. At our hotel, we've met a mother and daughter, Oni and Mualina, and they've invited us back to their village, the village of Narewa, which is just on the outskirts of our hotel, to see how they live and how they look after their children.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Come here.
Hat. Here's your hat.
What's it? There are kids everywhere here. Oni and her family live in a four-shack compound with their own little farm. She's raised four of her nieces and nephews, as well as her own kids, even though she works full-time.
You want to go and play with the kids? Come on.
While Scarlett's playing outside, she takes me to meet her sister, who lives in a one-bedroom shack where she's single-handedly raising nine grandchildren while their parents work away.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm Nonia.
Hi, Nunia. I'm Madeline.
Mm-mm.
So, Nunia, so tell me who you've got here living with you in the house.
Myself and my son, one son, two sons, and nine grandchildren.
You're a superwoman.
Yes.
Very much.
My youngest I'm looking after is coming to 6 months now.
So where do you all sleep? Just on the floor?
We put on the mattress here, spread on the mattress, sleeping mattress, four single sleeping mattress, two double sleeping mattress there. Night time, we spread it there. Daytime, we put it outside in the sun.
Why are you looking after so many children?
Because the parents working, that's all.
Are you happy to look after them?
I'm very happy to look after them.
Sitting on the floor next to Nunia is her daughter Naomi, who's home on annual leave from her hotel job on another island. She leaves her three-year-old son with her mum for 2 months at a time, then comes to visit for just 3 days.
Leaving him for the first time was very sad for us to leave them. But after 6 months then, we managed to leave them with our parents.
Did you ever think about doing anything else, leaving him anywhere else, other methods of childcare?
No, just through our mum. If we leave them to other baby care, to the daycare or the nannies, looking for other nannies, then they won't have the love like our mom will give them. Just the support from my mom that lead us through.
So I'll explain my own situation. I pay for Scarlett to go to daycare, and I pay a lot of money to go there. but I have no other choice. I have to pay if I want to work, and I like working, so I want to do that.
We feel sad about that because we can look after kids or children without money. We don't have to pay. We just look after them with our love and heart. As you pay a big amount of money, I feel it's not good.
Nunia says she doesn't need money to care for her grandkids, and that's lucky because she doesn't have any. This family, like many in Fiji, is dirt poor. While Scarlett wolfs down the sandwiches and fruit I've brought for her lunch, Nunia's brood make do with some water crackers and black tea.
They love the biscuit.
But Nunia seems to be happy and unfazed. In fact, for most of my visit, she stayed inside her shack watching Bollywood films on TV while her gang of grandkids played outside. And that's where I find Mualina, Nunia's teenage niece, who I met when she babysat for Scarlett at our hotel. She's keeping an eye on her younger cousins.
There's some kind of anarchy here. The kids are putting the toy car on a big pile of leaves and shouting loudly.
That's what they normally do.
This is definitely a boys' game. Scarlett's holding back, looking a little bit nervous. One of the boys has just bashed his cousin up with a stick across his back. And the other boys are shouting at him.
They're telling him to shut up. They're telling him not to cry because he's a boy.
So if a boy cries, he gets told to shut up? There's no cuddles?
Mm-mm. Even so, the parents doesn't do anything.
So the kids are pretty much left to solve their problems themselves?
Yeah.
So in our culture, if kids fight...
Yeah, you have to resolve yours. Yeah. I know it's different from your culture. They always solve their own problems. Hey, now.
It was amazing to see Mualina hang back, even though the boy got a really serious whack with a pretty big stick, but equally amazing to see him not run for adult help. But I'm learning this is the traditional Fijian way. They passionately love their kids, but they leave them alone, even when they fight. There's very little reading, and none of the concerns about developing young minds that worries so many parents of toddlers in the West. But Fijian kids seem happy, resilient and resourceful, which is more than I can say for a lot of Australian kids their age. Oni, the matriarch of the family we're visiting, puts it a different way.
To be honest, the Western kids, they are spoiled. They have plenty of things. You know, every birthday you have to buy things for them. Like the Western kids, they expect. Our kids, they don't.
We do lots of activities with our kids. So, you know, we go to the playground, or if they're at childcare, they'll do painting, or they'll, you know, lots of activities. But that's, you don't really do that so much here.
We don't spend time with them like you guys. That's a difference too. Like, you must take them and play with them in the daycare, and you take them to the park and play, you know, with them. But over here, they are on their own.
So can we say that one way of caring for children is better than another? A final question for anthropologist David Lancey, who we heard from earlier.
Oh, clearly not. I think one of the lessons we have to take away is there's very little about child rearing and child care that can be somehow extracted from the cultural context and where you can say, well, this way is better than that way.
What about this issue of education? Because that was one of the big contrasts between Australia and Fiji. I mean,
yes.
We value that very much in our culture, but there they didn't really seem to value that.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think this is a good example, a good illustration of why we should never romanticize or be too overly sentimental about the practices of pre-modern peoples, especially when it comes to children, because, the Fijian model isn't very effective in terms of preparing children for the rigors of modern schooling.
So what then are the big lessons that we can learn across cultures about when it comes to looking after children? Do we just get the childcare culture that we deserve, or is there something that we could learn from other societies?
The message that I think we can convey to parents of young children is stop stressing so much, that when we look at the children in Fiji and we see them developing, the evidence from from anthropology, from the study of children in other cultures, is that they're amazingly resilient emotionally. And the villagers know that because they let the kids kind of get beat up a little bit emotionally and what have you, and they know that they'll turn out just fine. So I think we can lighten up.
It's a comforting message, and one that I'll try to remember as Scarlett and I head back to work and nursery in Australia. In Fiji, we've seen a much more hands-off and communal approach to childcare. But is it better? Honestly, I'm not sure. I love the idea of Scarlett being more free and me being less stressed over her care and development. But as I listen to Scarlett read to herself in her nursery's little library, I can see she's happy and stimulated, and those can only be good things. The next journey for my little traveller and I is to China to visit a boarding kindergarten for three-year-olds. Why would parents send their only children away so young, and what effect does it have on the kids? Those are just some of the questions we'll be asking. We do hope you can join us then. Who's Left Holding the Baby is made by Wire Free Productions for the BBC World Service. That's a good one. The BBC.